Hello again, friends. Welcome to My Back 40 and the My Back 40 podcast. I'm your host, Steve O'Shaughnessy. Today, I'm speaking with Jeff Woodgate, instructor, guide, and owner of Alberta 66 Mountain Biking and a key player in the Grow Kananaskis movement. They're on a mission to protect over 900 hectares of pristine wilderness in the West Bragg Creek and Moose Mountain area from logging. Yep, that's 833 soccer fields. Can you imagine? These trails are planned to be logged, removing the majority of the remaining older growth forest, and will have an irreversible effect on the experience of outdoor recreation in the area. The economic impact of this project will be deep, affecting local businesses that thrive due to this diamond of a mountain biking destination. Now, this has been a hot button topic in the region where I live, in Alberta and BC, kind of in the on the border there, and it's been all over social media, and we're trying to raise awareness, and we encourage everyone who, after listening to this podcast, to go out and please sign the petition. I'm going to put some stuff in the show notes about who to email. I don't care where you are. My podcast reaches the world, and I know my audience and the people in my community care about this kind of thing. So I don't care where you are. Please sign the petition. Please email the addresses that I'm going to put in the show notes and express your opposition to logging natural environments like this. Especially when it's going to affect the economic well-being of the local population who rely on this mountain biking area. So this was put together super quick. I literally got off a call with Jeff like 20 minutes ago and started putting this together. I know it's short notice. There is an open house tonight. We'll talk about it in the podcast. If you're in the area, please stop by and educate yourself on what's going on. And then there will also be a march in the mountain biking area, which we will also be talking about. Sorry, I'm rushing because I really want to get this out. And so if you're in the region and you want to go check out the area and show your support, you can show up tonight and tomorrow night. Specifics are in here, and I'll put some stuff in the show notes. So I'm going to stop talking. Without further delay, I bring you Jeff Woodgate. Hey, Jeff. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
I want to thank you initially. I'm going to do an intro and stuff before this, but I'm going to get this out today. But I want to thank you for your time because it sounds like you're flat out.
it's an oddly busy time.
All surrounding Bragg Creek. Are you doing tons of media and stuff? What's going on?
Well, that is a big part of it, but it's also a busy season for my business, which is a guiding and coaching and shuttling company based out here in Bragg Creek. Nice. We also have a Airbnb that is currently very busy.
Oh.
And my wife is pregnant with twins, and so we're working on getting the home front is rather chaotic, but all in good things.
Well, I appreciate your time. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Hang on tight, buddy.
Well, it's funny. I'm one of those guys that in life in all things, I suppose, I'm early to the party and late to leave. I have a 30-year-old son.
Gotcha.
And so there's a little bit of a break in between.
Yeah.
And a different relationship. But my wife and I are now expecting twins.
Wow. Well,
yeah.
Again, congratulations. I was a late starter too. I didn't start. My boy came along like 10 years ago. So I was like in my 40s before I started.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's fulfilling.
My first one was at 21.
And 21.
Now I'm 51. So.
Wow, man. That's great. Wow. Life's a trip. Hey. So I don't know if you listen to my podcast, but I could easily go on for hours with you, but I know you don't have a lot of time. So I just want to get right to the root of why we connected today. And it has to do with what's going on around West Bragg. Can you talk about that?
Indeed. So I would describe it as sort of the greater Moose Mountain trail system. So West Bragg is off one shoulder of Moose Mountain, and there's another trail system called the Moose Mountain trail system that's off another shoulder. And so in the last few years, previously Spray Lake Sawmills and now West Fraser Timber has been announcing in their annual plans that they intend to harvest in that area. And in recent times, last spring, they had more specific mapping showing exactly how their harvest plans directly overlie large portions of those trail systems. And last 2 weeks ago, I believe it is now, they announced not quite finalized, but more specific plans, more detailed plans. And it now becomes concrete to people exactly how affected their riding experience or their hiking experience or their mushroom gathering experience, the birding experience is going to be.
Yeah, that's pretty major. Does this also affect Highwood? Does it go as far as that? Or
so what our organization is focused on is the maps that precisely overlie these trail systems. So there are, in their annual plans, they're going to have harvests, maps of harvests that stretch all the way from Sundry down to Waterton. So a massive area. And for each one of those, there's going to be varying degrees of ecological impact. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you take a tree from an environment, then there's going to be an impact. Mm-hmm. But softwood lumber harvest is generally considered to be a sustainable resource. It just varies in its sustainability depending on where you're harvesting from. So in the case of the Highwood harvest, there's concern about the volume that's being removed from a crucial watershed or several crucial watersheds that all feed into the same watershed and its environmental impacts. In this particular case, it's a different focus. Like if you walk into, there's an open house today. Mm-hmm. And if you walk in there, each one of those harvests within their massive area that they have is dedicated a map. All those maps are the same size, but they're all at a different scale. So the one that would cover Highwood is, you know, 2 feet by 3 feet. And the ones that cover each of these individual trail systems are also 2 3 by 3 feet. However, if they're the same scale, for example, if we're using the Highwood, it would be, I think it's like 8 times bigger.
Oh my gosh.
So these are very localized, precise little harvests that we are focusing on the low-hanging fruit of the reason why it should not be harvested, which is it's incredibly highly utilized as a recreational resource. Regardless of where you stand on the environmental impacts of these things, in this case, it's a people problem. There's the entire population of Calgary that recreates in the mountains goes to this spot or these two spots to do that recreation. And there's an offset where permission was granted to harvest in these areas around 2005, about 20 years ago. But the entire trail systems were only developed about 15 years ago. So in those 15 years, the usership of those trail systems have increased exponentially year over year. And now it's massive. You have 350,000 people estimated going into those zones annually. They collect fees, the conservation passes is collected, which is really just a icing on the cake. I don't really have anything against the conservation pass. It seems a reasonable way to collect funding that can go towards development of trail systems, development of resources, of infrastructure, like the parking lots and the toilets that they put in. And it seems like a sensible source of funding to protect these trails and the ecosystem, the micro ecosystem that overlies them, from instances such as these, like logging.
Yeah, and the environmental impact of that, right? Like you're a family man, you're having kids, you have an Airbnb, you have a local business, right? It's like it's this trickle down effect, yeah. Right?
Primarily those are economical effects.
Well, of course, right? And I think that there's probably a lot more if you did an ROI over like the next 5 years, you know, the amount of lumber you're going to pull out of there versus the amount of money coming in from. And I always brag about bikers. We're the best. We're the best tourists because we come in, we're going to ride single track all day. We're going to go eat and drink our faces off and then go to bed. We're going to get up and we're going to do it again, right?
The hamlet of Bragg Creek, which essentially everybody that's accessing these trails has to go into, is tiny. There's approximately a population of 600 people in the actual hamlet, I think.
Right.
And it supports, 13 restaurants at last count. I think there's 7 places to buy a hot beverage and a baked good, and that is in no small part to the credit of the folks going through to recreate up there. Sorry, so I mean it doesn't take an in-depth examination of the economic situation to come to some fairly clear conclusions. It's just that the government they did their peek at the situation and the balance of value to the Albertans that use it, 20 years ago. And at that time, it maybe made sense, probably did make sense that, the stumpage fees and the taxing and the business that, an Alberta-based business would have been able to have by processing the lumber there. Was a higher benefit than the small amount of people that recreated there. In those 20 years, that balance has completely shifted. So now those stumpage fees are meager. The taxation base is, or the taxation that they would get out of there is low. And it's no longer an Alberta-based business that would be doing the harvesting.
Were they based out of the U.S. or...?
I believe it's a publicly traded business. I believe they're based in Canada. I think it's a British Columbia based company.
Oh, sorry. I'm in BC. Sorry.
What's up?
I'm in BC.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. Well, fair enough. But I believe that's where they're based. I think they're out of Quesnel.
Oh, Quesnel. Yeah. Quesnel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just shifted entirely. And so what we're calling on, right now is to have the timber company's awareness that this is important and what they're on the cusp of doing, which I actually think that they have an awareness of, given that they've provided these maps in isolation so that it would be very easy for any governmental department in power to say, okay, you're not permitted to do these. And so make them aware and then raise enough noise that the government is then forced to re-examine the situation. That's what we're asking, is that the Alberta government, the current Alberta government, has a mandate, stated mandate, that they need to manage public lands, and that's what these are. You said you were in British Columbia?
Mm-hmm.
So logging differs in Alberta to British Columbia in as much as here there isn't it's not private lands and there aren't tenures awarded.
Right. So in BC, I understand there are woodlots that.
Yeah.
That,
and they purchased tenures to be able to. So it's a little bit more complex there because if you've, invested in being able to use those areas, then it'd be presumably harder to have you removed from said areas. Mm-hmm. Here, it was just a permission in concept, saying that the government feels that this would be an appropriate area now that they've done their checks and balances to harvest. So that checks and balances process needs to be ongoing. That 20-year jump may be appropriate in some areas, but in this particular case where it sits right next to a population in the greater Calgary area of 2 million people that don't have alternate areas to travel to within the half hour.
This is
Calgary zone.
Yeah, it's like the first gem of mountain biking as you leave the prairies, kind of, right?
Exaggerating? No, you're not. The good people of British Columbia are extremely fortunate that you can drive to any small town and there's a delightful trail system. I myself have spent long vacation after vacation poking around and exploring. Here we are, due to an accident of terrain and location, there are very few opportunities, and this trail system has become like the jewel of the area. The population of Greater Calgary, so the satellite cities around it, has been using it for the last 15 years, as I mentioned, through COVID. The people of central Alberta, so Red Deer and Edmonton, which are also big populations, discovered that they no longer had to drive 4 or 5 hours to access British Columbia trails. If they wanted to go for a ride, they could drive. It's still a big drive, but 2.5-3 hours to our location, and they were in world-class riding. And so that usership level is there. There's also a tourism factor that we haven't discussed that I'm at pains to, because I don't think it's really necessary at this point. I think that most of the tourism advertising that the government of Alberta does points to the areas like Canmore and Banff, and they have facilities to look after that. But that said, if they're ever going to want to attract international mountain biking, then this is the only area in Alberta that has that.
Yeah, and it's like the whole thing's just like you had said, they did this evaluation 2 decades ago, and you know, the these regions aren't a steady state. You know, there's population movement and increase in recreation, I don't know. And I guess I want to go on record too. And you say in your website too, you're not against logging, right? Like
I am personally not against logging. I see it as a reasonably sustainable resource, that if sensibly harvested, then, I use wood products. I printed out my flyers today on paper. Yeah. And so it would be hypocritical to say that this can't be done at all. It's just, and there is an element of NIMBYism here. It's just that this particular yard is not my backyard. This is a 2 million people's front yard. this is our living room. This is or a rec room. This is a space that we use all the time, and is the primary source of recreational well-being for the huge part of the population. And our government in Alberta has stated a desire, a mandate to support recreation for its population. And so it wouldn't even take a deep dive in terms of the situation. It would take the correct ministers to go, oh, wait, we're talking about a tiny little area compared to this vast area that they have. I think the numbers, it represents 0.16% of their total available area to harvest.
Right. So that's what I was going to ask. So all they have to do is give up 1.6%?
No, 0.16.
Oh, 0.16.
0.16.
Of forest of harvest
that
to save the trails.
That said, I'm not against them being compensated for it. Conservation fee would be a very suitable bucket of money to draw from to perhaps provide some offsets for this the publicly traded company that needs to look after its shareholders and is driven to do so.
And so the fact that, you know, these I'm going to try to be delicate, but the CEOs, the stakeholders of this company, who try to be delicate, but I want to say, who just want to line their pockets with Alberta lumber, really could pass on the 0.16 and then collect some of those, what do you call them? The $90 fee you guys were paying. What was it called? Like a recreation fee?
The conservation fee.
Fee. I'm sorry.
I mean, that would obviously involve government involvement and buy-in. But it seems to me that, when you're paying a conservation fee, that is what it's called, then there is an implication there that there will be some conservation.
At least some effort, like take a bit of effort.
Yeah. At this point, those fees have been used For the Trail Societies do receive some monies, certainly not to the scale that is collected. And there are development of infrastructure in terms of parking lots and toilets and that sort of thing, all of which would certainly indicate that the government is fully aware of the level of utilization.
Of course.
And then the rest of the money goes into general coffers, or it all goes into general coffers, and that much has been drawn out. It's just a matter of getting people's attention. I acknowledge that given the level of uproar around the ecological impacts of tree harvesting in the area, specifically that at Highwood, that the ears that we're trying to reach are perhaps stuffed with the cotton of these previous conversations. Mm. Sorry, that's an inarticulate way of expressing that, but their ears are perhaps a little bit closed to the fact that we have a unique use case here. This is a gimme. This is, so many people use this. We should protect this.
Yeah.
Those wilderness areas are magnificent, and I wouldn't call them pristine, but they do protect the watershed. And so those ecological objections are legitimate. It's just that in this particular case, we're outside of those ecological ecological arguments, where we're into, this is just used by a huge portion of the population for everyday use.
And I imagine, take it away. Yeah, and I imagine with the environment that we've been having and the drought levels we have, you want to keep as much moisture in the soil as possible. Like I head out that direction. Truth be told, I've never ridden in West Bragg. I've got riding all over BC.
We understand.
Yeah. And you know what? I will. And I will get out there. I'm not going to be able to go out and do the walk tomorrow, but, so you deforest this entire area and it's just going to become a desert, there's going to be nothing.
So the other really significant difference between, again, we go back to British Columbia, and this eastern slopes of the Canadian Rockies, you guys have soil. we have a smat, like an inch and a half of topsoil over rock.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, as a trail builder, that's a significant difference in terms of the way that we design and build sustainable trail systems. And it affects the level of, or the type of riding that we have. But it hugely affects the regrowth or the ability of an environment to bounce back. Like if you, Fernie, for example, if you go in and harvest the fir, larch, and some extent, they've got some redwood in there, then those are larger trees and significantly more money than the younger growth lodgepole pine and spruce that we have here. But the soil makes it so that once those trees are removed, there's a green environment the following season. There's some big stumps and that sort of thing, and that can be make a significant difference. But you've got a reasonably pleasant environment after 4 years, 5 years. It's going to take hundreds of years for those trees to go back, but it's something. Whereas here, if they harvest, then they sort of till the land, scarification is what it's called. And so that little tiny bit of topsoil is mixed in with the substrate that's under it. And it's no longer particularly suitable for a lot of the diversity that you'd experience in the forests here. So what's really cool for it is planting a bottle pot. And that's what they want to do. With it scrambling its way back over the next 10 years, and you've got some stuffy little pines, but you don't really have much in the way of anything else. Whereas currently, especially these areas over these forests, it's essentially virgin forest. There was a fire back in 1906. And so most of the trees in this area are have been self-seeded. Well, all of them have been self-seeded, but over that 100-year period. And so you've got different ages, different species, and yeah, and it's just a natural environment that is evolving naturally. So as opposed to the scarification process and this monoculture that you end up with afterwards, where you've got all these lodgepole pines that are all the same age in an area, which my understanding is that increases the likelihood of fire and pine beetle. Whereas this diversely, this forest that is evolved naturally and has different areas that are of different area, different levels of maturation is sort of a natural deterrent for that sort of thing. There's stands of coniferous and of deciduous, and that diversity provides some natural protection.
Yeah, needless to say, there's a lot of layers to this, right?
Yeah,
there's environmental, political, economical, emotional, health and well-being of population.
Indeed.
I'm a huge advocate of you take all these trails away and people can't get out and recreate, and it makes for a miserable population, right? It just makes for an unhealthy, and you know what? I know firsthand that your medical system in Alberta is crumbling as well, right? So it's like, do you want to add more mental health issues, physical health issues by taking away everyone's recreation? So there's that Indeed. Layer of it as well. It's a multiple layered issue that I feel like the people kind of at the top of those layers, for lack of a better word, are like you said, blind or deaf to the bigger picture, you know?
Right. And I mean, there's systems whereby they have been insulated from that information.
Yeah.
And I think that the tools are at our disposal. There's the population that cares about this issue, that is large enough that as long as we get our letter writing campaigns going, and keep poking at government, our voices will be heard. And at that time, as I said, it just takes a cursory glance at the situation to go, okay, we already recognize the value of recreation to mental and physical well-being. We need to have these areas available to our population, and we need them to be attractive. And so, yeah. Oh, wait, it would just take a small swipe of the pen and not a particularly large monetary output to get this huge win. And it would be a huge win. Saving this would be, monumental to a large portion of the population.
Yeah.
And you would be appropriately recognized for it.
Yeah. No, I think this is a really important subject. I'm mindful of your time. We have about 5 minutes. Can you just tell people at this point where folks can go to learn more, sign the position, the petition, and who they can email or find that email list? Where can they find that stuff?
Thank you for that. So we have a website, growcananaskis.com, and that's a good hub to start at. There's information to be found there. There's a petition to sign, which at last, I think we're just shy of 18,000 signatures at last glance. And there's also some resources to use to compose yourself a letter. And the letter is the biggest portion of this, the biggest ask. It's we need to have people send off their thoughts on how this affects them to their MLAs and then the list of other government entities that we have provided so that we get attention. And somebody is going to go, oh, okay, we just need to reevaluate the situation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, go to the website. There is an event today that is the West Fraser Timber, that's the name of the logging company, is having their open house at 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. In Cochrane, Alberta, at the Cochrane Ranch House facility. And that's their that's their checkbox to say that they have done their consultation with the public. So there'd be some maps there. It's an opportunity to ask some questions of the timber company as to their motivation and what can be done and what the effects are. And you also get to see a close-up look at those maps and see how it affects you. Use that to then be motivated to write to your MLA and express what it means to you. There's another event that you did allude to, a march that's being held to raise awareness, to create a feeling of solidarity within the people that care about this. It can sometimes feel a little bit isolating online. But we want everybody to know that there is a large usership that cares every bit as much as they do. From 6:30 from the base of the Moose Mountain Road parking lot, the group will be gathering and then working their way up the 2 kilometers to the 2 kilometer parking lot. It's a closed road. People are invited to bring their bikes or hike or whatever, as long as it's non-motorized, or at least not, it can be electric bicycles if they wish. Photo op, a little bit of speechifying and that sort of thing.
Awesome. Great. Well, maybe I'll see you later. I'm not sure. I'm going to head out there. Probably I'll be there around 5, check things out. I'm going to walk around with a recorder and see if
I hope to be there for the first part of it.
Nice.
I have a birth and babies class that evening.
Oh, do you? You know what? I don't know if you have a second, but anyway, I want to thank you, for taking the time to talk to me, but
thank you.
It's my pleasure. I'll get this out really quickly. I'm not sure what I'll use for an image. I might just scrape it off your social feed if that's okay.
That's absolutely fine.
Watching babies be born is amazing.
I get to do it twice in the near future.
it's incredible. Catch that hot potato, you know, and it's just bananas. Like, that's one of the most memorable experiences I've had. It's just so mind blowing. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. How old are your kids, Steve?
9 and 11.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. I had to think about that for a second. Yeah.
and girls, I see the picture behind you there.
Oh, no, I just have a really handsome boy.
Ah, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. Jasper, nice. On the bottom there. Yeah. He's got super long hair. We're a hairy family.
No, my first son also sported the long hair and that was a constant thing. He embraced it. I'm a boy.
Yeah, constantly clearing drains out. That's for sure. Yeah. All right, man. Well, Jeff, thanks so much for spending some time with me today and educating me, because I was a little bit ignorant to the subject as well.
All good. And these are unique situations, unique to the location, right? So yeah, there's details about it.
So folks who have the time today or live in the area or Calgary, it's only about a half an hour from Calgary to get to an open house.
Yeah, any Calgary resident is fully aware of where Cochrane is.
And BC too. I mean, I'm driving a couple hours, but Canmore, Banff, like all those people, you know, they're riding West Bragg as well, I'm sure, in Moose Mountain.
When I say that it's the primary riding area, there's people move out to Canmore to access riding.
Exactly.
But there's a level of riding that is not easily found in Canmore. So we get a huge amount of people coming to the West Bragg region. I mean, wouldn't do it every week, but coming every so often to use these trails because of the diversity of trails.
Yeah, it's an important subject. So people who have the time should show up at the open house, or make sure you write your MLA or check out the website and sign the petition. I signed the petition yesterday or a couple of days ago, and I plan on writing a letter as well of support to hopefully preserve this area.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. So yeah, Jeff, that's all I had. So thanks.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate your attention to the matter.
Of course. And I hope to see you later.
You bet.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Have a good day. Bye.
Bye now.
I want to thank Jeff again for his time and thank all of you for tuning in. This was a quick and dirty podcast. I wanted to get it out right away. It's an important issue. It's a hot button issue. And I think it's up to us, the humans on this blue marble, to protect our natural resources as much as we can. You know, the fact that a company can go in and just basically destroy a recreational area without any consideration to the public is really disappointing. And so we need to kind of do our part. We live in a democracy, and we have a voice, and let's use it. So please sign the petition. Check the show notes. I'm going to have the list of email addresses you can use to basically CC all the people to express your disappointment in what's going on there. And, you know, that's all we can do. We can just do our best and push back against stuff like this, because, you know, riding bikes is important to us. Having a place to exercise, to be in nature, to just be better humans, it's so important to have places to recreate. And needless to say, I'm really hoping that the outcome for this will be some sort of compromise, is what I hope. So thanks again. Thanks for your support. And don't forget, keep the rubber side down. Check the show notes.